Welcome back. For those of you joining us now, I'm Ethan Elkind sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. We are podcasting our show, and you can find out more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to our past shows there and sign up for our newsletter so you can find out what's coming up next. And if you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org, or you can call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Well, earlier this month, President Trump announced that he could use military force to invade and occupy Greenland. Our next guest, Adam Fetterman, writes that Trump is not the first U.S. president to set his sights on Greenland, which is a country that has served as a strategic bulwark and staging ground for the United States since the end of World War II. The U.S. once had more than a dozen military installations on the island, many of which have left behind a legacy of toxic pollution. And the country, the U.S., still operates a major base, space base, there in the far northwestern corner of the country. And its radar installations are considered key to North American security. The United States is currently investing hundreds of millions of dollars in upgrades to this space base. Now, Adam Fetterman is a reporting fellow with Type Investigations, a nonprofit newsroom dedicated to transforming the field of independent investigative journalism. And his latest piece looks at U.S. efforts to expand its military and economic presence in Greenland. And he's here today to talk about the piece and what we can expect potentially from this new administration in Greenland. So, Adam, welcome to Your Calls One Planet series. Now, Adam, let's start with Trump's colonial ambitions, his imperial ambitions to buy or potentially force Greenlanders to sell their island. This has resurfaced again after he talked about it a bit in his first term. And of course, it's been met with condemnation from a whole host of officials in Europe and in Greenland itself. And now he has recently sent his son there for a day trip to try to supposedly rally support. What do you make of Trump's individual obsession with Greenland, and why is he talking about this now?
Well, it's clearly a priority for him and the incoming administration, both to exert U.S. power in the Arctic, which has become increasingly important among, you know, the world's superpowers, and the United States competing with Russia and China for dominance of the region, which is a bipartisan approach to the Arctic. I think Trump's personal obsession, you know, he has told other reporters that he sort of views Greenland through the lens of a real estate developer, and because of its size and proximity to the United States, it's attractive to him. But I think it's probably more instructive to look at the people around him who are interested in sort of pursuing this idea. Including, you know, former advisors who worked with him during his first administration and clearly haven't, you know, let the idea drop. So there are a lot of questions about what is, you know, sort of what the end game is. And I think much of it has to do with expanding U.S. military presence in Greenland and in the Arctic, and also accessing you know, resources that the island possesses.
Well, on the subject of resources, it was reported that Trump first floated the idea back in 2019 after reportedly being briefed at the White House by Greg Barnes, an Australian mining geologist and owner of one of the largest rare earth deposits in Greenland, and Ronald Lauder, a longtime friend of Trump's and heir to the Estee Lauder fortune, has also pushed the idea. So how much of this is the national security, geopolitical implications versus the specific mining interests? How much would you attribute that to where Trump is coming from on this?
I think it's both. You know, the picture of mining Greenland is somewhat complicated. You know, it does have a lot of mineral resources, but, you know, very little actual mining is taking place there for a variety of reasons, partly because of the remoteness of the island and lack of infrastructure. It's incredibly difficult to actually start a mining operation there. And I think it'll be interesting to see whether the Trump administration actually pushes that forward and tries to invest in mining ventures there. The U.S. Export-Import Bank has already explored potentially financing a couple of mines in Greenland. And that's what I traveled there in 2023 for a story that I did on U.S. military and economic policy in Greenland. So I do think that it is an important driver, but the extent to which it is actually realized remains very much an open question. In terms of security and geopolitics, I think there's no question. I mean, this is the reason why Greenland has kind of always been a prize or a object of, you know, interest for American presidents going back to Truman after the Second World War, who also floated the idea of purchasing the island. You know, I think that has emerged probably as the more sort of decisive factor, particularly as sea ice recedes and shipping lanes are fought over, and as tensions between the United States, Russia, and China mount.
Well, maybe we should talk just about the legal status of Greenland now. Can you just describe what the situation is in Greenland? It's not completely a sovereign nation. What's its status, and how would the U.S. then leverage that?
Right. It's a semi-autonomous territory of Denmark. I mean, it has what's called home rule. They have their own parliament. They essentially govern themselves, and domestic policy is dictated by the people of Greenland and its parliament. But Denmark still retains control of, foreign policy, security, and, you know, critically, you know, a point that's often not really emphasized in reporting on this relationship is the fact that Denmark supplies Greenland with about half of its annual budget, upwards of $750 million to $1 billion a year, which the island depends on for its very sort of ability to function and operate. So it's both, but within that context, the island has been moving toward independence for many years, and it is part of this dance between the three countries as they sort of decide how to renegotiate, any of the agreements between the various parties.
Well, talk about the demographics of Greenland. How many people? What is the sort of demographic makeup there? And what is their feeling generally? I know it's hard to generalize. Any community is diverse, but what is their the overriding feeling about their relationship with Denmark versus full sovereignty or versus becoming part of the United States?
Right. No, it's a great question. I mean, it's a very small population given the size of the island. I mean, it's about 56,000 people. The capital city, Nuuk, is home to about 20,000, and then the rest of the towns and villages are quite small, and many of them incredibly remote, not connected by highways or roads. The sentiment toward Denmark is quite critical, and there's a lot of resentment toward the colonial power. And the United States, I think, has managed to sort of avoid much of that discontent, even though we've occupied parts of the country for many years and have this massive military base that also required forcibly relocating, a couple of dozen families to establish the military base, and has had a very complicated history in that region. So I think there's a desire to be free of Danish rule. And to the extent that closer ties with the United States would facilitate that, I think many Greenlanders are probably open and receptive to that idea. But the prospect of being taken over by or purchased by another superpower is incredibly, I think, both insulting and not something that most people in Greenland would like to see happen.
We're speaking with Adam Fetterman, reporting fellow with Type Investigations, a nonprofit newsroom dedicated to transforming the field of independent investigative journalism. And we're talking about his latest piece, looking at U.S. efforts to expand its military and economic presence in Greenland. This is Ethan Elkind. You're listening to Your Call's One Planet series. I'm sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and we'd love to hear from you if you've been to Greenland, if you have thoughts about the U.S.'s interest in Greenland and our history of involvement in Greenland, or what the U.S. should be doing going forward with respect to Greenland. We'd love to hear from you. You can join the conversation by dialing 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-7233. 798-8255, or you can send us an email with any questions or comments to yourcall@kalw.org. And Adam, you were mentioning the sort of geopolitical rivalry here with Russia, China, Europe, and of course, the United States, all involved with Greenland. Can you talk a bit more about what all these different countries' role has been in Greenland, what their interest is in Greenland?
Yeah, it's a great question, in part because we often talk about these rivalries when we have conversations about Greenland, but many of the machinations are unfolding in the Arctic at large and not necessarily specific to Greenland. I mean, before Trump entered office during his first administration, China was making some inroads in investing in Greenland. And there's sort of a famous anecdote of a Chinese company that was interested in bidding on the rebuilding of the airport in Nuuk, which has recently reopened and will start having direct flights from the United States to Greenland. And at the time, the Secretary of Defense, Jim Mattis, called his counterpart in Denmark and told him, you know, don't let China get this contract. And the Danes stepped in and essentially funded it themselves and kept China on the sidelines. And that's been the U.S. strategy in both Democratic and Republican administrations. So there has been a concerted effort to keep China out of Greenland. But, you know, China in 2018 declared itself a near Arctic state, and Russia, of course, has significant Arctic territory and coastline, and has always viewed it as part of its national identity and a driver of sort of economic development. So as sea ice, you know, diminishes, as I mentioned before, there's been increasing competition to control shipping lanes and to some extent access resources, both oil and gas and minerals. So understandably, these countries are jockeying for positions of power in the region. And Greenland, of course, figures into that because of its, you know, its strategic location and its size.
Well, Greenland is such an interesting case study of climate change in a lot of ways. You talked about the receding sea ice and the ice sheets on the land itself. What are some of the predictions about how climate change is going to continue to affect Greenland, and how will that play into the other side of the climate change equation with some of these minerals being needed for things like electric vehicles?
Right. Right, it's sort of a perverse irony that climate change is to some extent creating greater access to some of these possible deposits of rare earth metals, mostly, you know, the largest of which are at the sort of the southern tip of the island. I mean, recent research has shown that the ice sheet, which covers, you know, something like 80% of Greenland's landmass, so it's massive. Is, you know, melting rapidly. And of course, this has all kinds of implications for not only Greenland, but sea level rise around the world. I think sometimes, you know, it's not changing the dynamic in terms of development of the mining industry overnight. These are longer term potentialities. And at the moment, you know, as I mentioned before, there still is very little mining activity in Greenland, and it remains to be seen whether it becomes financially feasible and attractive to develop industry in a place that does not have the infrastructure or workforce or other elements that, you know, mining operations require to get up and running.
And let's talk about the U.S. space base there and the history of U.S. military involvement. What's been some of the legacy of that in terms of both the pollution and how it may or may not have affected the politics of the U.S. in Greenland? Has there been a fallout in a negative way from the U.S. having these military and space bases there?
I think there has been a fallout. I mean, the legacy is not a rosy one. I traveled to the village of Connaught in northwestern Greenland in 2023 to report on some of these issues. And that's the village, the northernmost village in Greenland. And it's also the closest settlement to the U.S. base. And, you know, there are still descendants living there who were children when the base was initially expanded and were forced to leave their homes and flee in the 1950s. And I also spoke with many individuals who remember the crash of a B-52 bomber in 1968 on the ice just west of the base in an area that was used by local hunters carrying four thermonuclear bombs, which burned. They didn't detonate, but they burned on the ice. And, you know, many of the men who were involved in the search and rescue later died of cancer. And there's a real sort of visceral sense of anger toward both Denmark and the United States for these events and the fact that they don't feel that they've been they don't feel like they've been compensated for them. Mm-hmm. So this is all part of the legacy of US military activity in Greenland. And I would add one more element, which is that we also created a sort of military installation under the ice sheet, which was designed to store nuclear missiles that would be fired into the Soviet Union if necessary. It was a completely crazy idea, and it ultimately didn't come to fruition because it was structurally unsound to build these tunnels under the ice. But that, all of that waste, including toxic waste from the weapons that were stored there and diesel fuel and everything else was just buried under the ice sheet. And, as the climate warms and this ice sheet recedes, that toxic material will eventually find its way into the ocean. The U.S. presence there is a complicated one. And, the base also employs a lot of local people. It brings in certain amenities to the supermarket. So there are some benefits. I don't want to completely ignore them. But the notion that Greenlanders are just going to sort of open their arms and embrace an expanded U.S. military presence, I think, is misguided.
We're speaking with Adam Fetterman, reporting fellow with Type Investigations, a nonprofit newsroom dedicated to transforming the fields of independent investigative journalism, and about his latest piece looking at U.S. efforts to expand its military and economic presence in Greenland. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar on Your Call's One Planet series. And Adam, Trump has obviously been getting a lot of media attention for what his sort of saber rattling around expanded influence, potentially buying Greenland. But of course, the Biden administration was also expanding U.S. sphere of influence in Greenland, and just on a more quiet kind of basis. Now, former President Biden, and what are the what were some of the steps that the Biden administration was taking in Greenland?
Yeah, well, I mean, just before Trump left office in 2020, the U.S. Reopened its consulate in Nuuk. It had been closed in 1953, I believe. And the, as I mentioned before, there have been some efforts to explore financing of mining operations in Greenland. I mean, one of Anthony Blinken's first overseas trips was to Greenland and Denmark, clearly elevating the status of that partnership. It's a lot of soft power stuff and some investment, mostly focused on sort of overhauling the country's mining agency and the process for permitting and regulating the industry. The airport issue as a geostrategic matter, keeping China out, and now the Nuuk International Airport, which opened in November, I believe, will begin direct flights from the United States beginning later this month, I believe. And we also renamed the space base there was known as Thule, which was sort of the European name that had been given to it, and has been renamed to reflect a local, the sort of the region that it occupies, Patufik. So I think these were attempts to, during that ceremony, I should add, the U.S. military actually apologized for the hardships that it had caused the people who were forced to leave their homes. So I think there was an effort to kind of make amends for some of what the United States had done in the past. And as you said, it was a much less ostentatious and a much sort of quieter diplomatic strategy.
Mm-hmm. And what about Russia? You've talked about Russia also having an interest here. And of course, with the war raging in Ukraine and Russia's invasion there, how does that play into the geopolitics now of Russia's trying to assert its influence in Greenland?
Sure. I mean, Russia doesn't really have any designs on Greenland itself. I mean, Russia's interest is in maintaining its dominance of the Arctic, part of the Arctic that it, part of the Arctic that it already controls. You know, I think the big sort of shift, of course, is composition of NATO and how that's going to impact Arctic geopolitics with Sweden and Finland now joining the alliance, and which means that all Arctic nations except for Russia are members of NATO. And of course, Finland shares a extensive border with Russia, and much of Russia's northern sort of military fleet is based near there. So there are a lot of sensitive, I think, security issues for the Russians that are going to only exacerbate potential conflict in the Arctic. And both, you know, NATO and the Russians are holding, you know, more military exercises in the region. And as with Trump's sort of assertion about possibly acquiring or even using military force to occupy Greenland, it's only going to like heighten many of these tensions that were already very much coming to the surface.
And to try to read the tea leaves a little bit here with what this new second Trump administration is going to be doing, can you talk about the ambassador appointment to Denmark, which could be central to this, as well as some of the people around Trump now, some of these billionaire investors who are supporting some of the mining interests that may be wanting to take advantage of Greenland?
Yeah, I mean, there are many dimensions to this. The ambassador, Ken Howery, was a co-founder of PayPal, along with Peter Thiel. He was actually ambassador to Sweden during Trump's first term. Sounds like a relatively sort of soft-spoken, behind-the-scenes kind of figure. I don't know that much about him or what his personal interests or ambitions might be. Seems to be well-respected in the sort of diplomatic circles that he operates in. A handful of other former advisors have been, you know, busy writing op-eds, advancing the strategy of possibly purchasing or establishing some sort of new relationship with Greenland. And then there is sort of a wing of the Silicon Valley elite that has coalesced around Trump that is also interested in establishing these cities or sort of quasi nation states in places around the world that would not be subject to the sort of regulations or you know, governing structures of conventional nations, part of this network state movement, and they've been quite they're somewhat on the fringe, but of course their status has you know, become much greater now that they're so close to the president. And I mean, in particular, one big Trump you know, supporter, Joe Lonsdale, he's one of the founders of Palantir. He told the BBC, you know, that the frontier mindset is healthy. And this notion that the United States needs to sort of expand its footprint within the Western Hemisphere is taking on new salience. And we don't entirely know where that's going to go.
Well, it's always, as you say, it's hard to know where things are going and make any predictions here. But I mean, is it possible that a vote could be put to the people of Greenland about becoming part of the United States? What are some of the possible things and actions we might see now with this new second Trump administration?
I mean, the Greenlandic parliament seems pretty unified in its opposition to any sort of, you know, takeover by the United States. I mean, it could accelerate discussions about Greenlandic independence. And I think the terms of any kind of an agreement between the United States, Greenland, and Denmark could certainly be renegotiated. But I really don't see Greenland gravitating toward any kind of, you know, colonial kind of relationship with the United States.
And just briefly, are you going to be following up on this story? What can we expect next from you?
I will continue to focus on the Arctic and issues in Alaska as well with this new administration. Yes.
All right. Well, we'll have to stay tuned for that. Adam Fetterman, reporting fellow with Type Investigations, latest piece looking at U.S. efforts to expand that's military, U.S. military and economic presence in Greenland. Thank you so much for joining us on your call.
Thanks a lot, Ethan.
That's it for our show today. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, you can visit yourcallradio.org. You can also find us on iTunes, where you can give us a review, and you can follow us on social media and email any show ideas and feedback that you might have to yourcall@kalw.org. Malihe Razazan produced today's show. Tarek Ansari is our studio engineer. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind. It's Your Call.